Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. The Juneau Independent, a new web-based newsroom in Juneau, launched today with a mission to offer a newspaper that is locally owned and operated. Mark Sabatini, the former managing editor of the Juneau Empire, is leading the effort. He's worked in the newspaper industry for nearly four decades, with stints at the Empire, the Los Angeles Times, and the Antarctic Sun. Sabatini announced his resignation from the role with the Empire this week over disagreements with the Mississippi-based publisher Carpenter Media Group, which bought the newspaper last year. He says he was then fired by the company. Sabatini says his goal is to make the Juneau Independent the city's new paper of record.
Media is going through a lot of pretty drastic changes, and so, yeah, it's a little ambitious to launch a news website, but if the company that owns the Empire says we're not going to keep anybody here, then for all practical purposes, the Empire has become a satellite office of a different paper.
Sabatini says he wants to give Juneau residents the option to support a nonpartisan newspaper that is written, edited, and reported by people who live in the community. He's applied to make the outlet a nonprofit, but that's still pending. So far, the website includes news stories written by Sabatini, along with a handful of contributed opinion pieces from community members. Sabatini says his goal is to create a board of directors and hire a handful of full-time reporters. He says that will come down to how much the community supports it.
I'm very confident this can do well the way it is. Bigger, it's going to need both more people involved in helping out with it, in terms of logistics, and it will need a wider amount of support from the community in terms of subscribers.
This is KTOO. I'm Clarice Larson, and happy solstice. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. A Juneau court declared a woman who has been missing for 6 years legally dead on Tuesday at the request of her family. The woman's case was never solved. They sought the death declaration in hopes of getting a chance to ask police about their investigation in front of an official audience, but that didn't happen. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry attended the hearing and has this story.
Tracy Lynn Day's family hasn't heard from her since Valentine's Day of 2019. 6 years later, in a Juneau courtroom, Judge Peggy McCoy presided over a jury of six through the proceedings to declare Day legally dead.
You've been called in as jurors today for a presumptive death hearing to consider the circumstances of the disappearance of Tracy Lynn Day and to determine whether she should be presumed dead.
Day's daughter, Kaylin Schneider, petitioned for the declaration. She said the death declaration would help her family settle her estate, but that's not the main reason she came to the courthouse. She came in the hopes of getting answers from the Juneau Police Department and the justice system. Over the last few years, Schneider has been using social media to bring attention to her mother's case by connecting it to missing and murdered Indigenous peoples' cases nationwide. Day was Tlingit and experiencing homelessness when she went missing. But Schneider said Day stayed in contact with her regularly.
We just wanted to tell her story in a legal setting and make JPD answer our questions. That's what this was about.
In the courtroom, Judge Peggy McCoy called Juneau Police Detective Frank Dolan to the stand. He wasn't the detective who originally investigated the case. The investigating detective is no longer with JPD. A spokesperson for the department said in an email that no officer is currently assigned to this case, but if there's new information, a detective will be assigned. McCoy asked Dolan questions about his knowledge of the case, and he summarized the evidence in the files. He said there was no evidence of Day leaving Juneau or of anyone seeing her after February 2019. McCoy had one last question for Dolan.
Was there anything about the investigation that would lead you to believe she was still alive?
No.
Schneider and her family planned to also ask Dolan questions themselves. But Judge McCoy said that in a death declaration hearing, only the judge and jury are able to question witnesses.
All we're trying to establish today is there's no reason to believe that she's still alive.
McCoy also asked Schneider and other members of Day's family about the last time they spoke to her and if they believe she's dead. They all said that they haven't seen or spoken with her since that Valentine's Day, and they believe her to be dead. Later, Schneider said she'd been preparing to give court testimony and ask questions about parts of the case she doesn't understand.
And I had all these questions that I was going to ask. This is all my evidence. I have the audio. I stayed up all night.
Schneider said police have denied her request to access the police files about her mother's case. JPD's spokesperson said the department's policy is that they don't share police reports in open cases. The family also wants to know if the case is still open or if the declaration will affect its status. Juneau police say that missing persons cases stay open until the person is found, and Day's legal status as dead or alive does not change the case's status. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cormery.
And invasive species are everywhere, but the folks who dedicate their lives to battling them believe they can win, especially in Alaska. Last week was Alaska's Invasive Species Awareness Week. KTOO's Alex Solomon took a walking tour around downtown Juneau to learn about some of the pesky plants that have taken root in Southeast.
One doesn't have to go far to find invasive plants.
First, I wanted to show you this really interesting tree we have right in front of us.
It's an invasive European mountain ash, and it's just a few steps outside KTOO's front door. The tree is blooming right now with small white flowers that will give rise to bright orange and red berries in the fall. Emily Reed is the regional invasive plant coordinator at the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition. She says that birds choose to eat these berries over native berries.
And because the birds fly long distances and the seeds can germinate after being pooped out, we're finding these in really kind of more natural areas.
She says there are thousands of European mountain ashes around Southeast. They are still planted ornamentally here and are hard to get rid of because they can resprout from a stump. Reed says the best way to kill the tree is to apply a bit of herbicide to the stump after chopping it down. She walks down Egan Drive to the back of the Four Points Hotel parking lot, where the hillside is covered in one of the most invasive plants in the world, Japanese knotweed. The plant mainly reproduces by spreading underground rhizomes, which are modified stems that are known to crack roads and building foundations.
They go pretty deep, and a new plant can regenerate from a piece of rhizome as small as your fingernail.
Reed says that makes ripping the plant out of the ground futile, and controlling it extremely difficult. She and her colleagues return to the same patches year after year to apply herbicide to the plants. A non-native species becomes invasive when it throws off the balance of an ecosystem and starts taking over. Alaska's geographic isolation and low population make Reed optimistic that invasions can be kept at bay, since the state isn't completely overrun by noxious weeds yet, unlike most of the U.S. She continues up Main Street and takes a left on 4th, where creeping buttercup blooms along the sidewalk, with yellow flowers reaching toward the sun. This invasive plant has spread through most of Southeast Alaska, and it does well wherever there is bare ground.
We're in this kind of final stage of invasion, where it's more like, we're not going to get rid of it.
So instead of trying to get rid of it, Reed says she's focused on keeping it from creeping into new habitats. She's worried about uplift meadows, which are tidal flats and marshes that are now rising above the seawater since the land is shedding the weight of melting glaciers. They offer a lot of bare ground for buttercup to take over. Reed disappears into the brush behind an old, broken-down truck on Village Street and emerges with a long stalk that has small white flowers on top.
Yeah, they can be quite satisfying to pull. You just have to be really on top of it.
This is garlic mustard, and it's on the opposite end of the invasion spectrum. So far, Reed says Juneau is the only place in Alaska where garlic mustard has been found, though it has invaded much of the lower 48 already.
It's also what we call allelopathic, which means that it puts out chemicals into the soil that prevents other plants from growing.
That gives it a competitive advantage over native plants. But Reed says she has hope about managing invasive plants in Alaska because many of them are in the early stages.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and we're in a place where we can be thinking about prevention and rapid response, which is very different than anywhere else I've lived or studied invasive species.
And the more people know what to look out for, the better those efforts can be. Reed recommends learning to identify the invaders near you, washing your shoes and brushing your dog when you leave an area, and taking pictures and GPS locations to report invasives when you get home. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And more than 900 cyclists are set to participate this weekend in an annual cross-border race that starts in Canada and ends in Haines. But as Avery L. Felt reports for the Alaska Desk, this year's competition could look a little different amid ongoing political tensions between the U.S. and Canada.
The Kluane-Chilkat International Bike Relay has been happening for decades, and it has a particular legacy.
So it's been going on since 1993, and it's all about the goodwill between Americans and Canadians.
That's Richard Clement. He's the vice president of the organization Behind the Race, which draws people from Alaska, Canada, and beyond year after year. The 150-mile course starts in Haines Junction, Canada, and ends in Haines, Alaska. The event is capped at 1,200 people. Most ride as members of relay teams, though some race the entire route solo. Usually, it sells out within 2 weeks, but that didn't happen this year. About 930 riders signed up.
We suspect it was Canadians who just didn't want to come to the U.S. But, you know, there's other factors too, like the exchange rate. It's unbelievably bad for Canadians to come down and change to American dollars these days.
Still, the vast majority of this year's registered participants, around 85%, are Canadian, according to race organizers. Clement says they also heard from a small number of Canadian teams, about a dozen, who did register and plan to race. But they're choosing not to finish the event because they don't want to cross the border into the U.S. That was the impetus behind a new policy posted to the race website on June 13th to accommodate those participants. It says cyclists must travel southbound only, and that those who don't want to cross the border must withdraw from the race no later than checkpoint 6. At that point, or sooner, cyclists must get into their team vehicles and drive home, as opposed to riding back toward Haines Junction.
For safety considerations, we tried to explain to them, don't turn around and try to ride your bike home. We cover people going to Haines. We don't cover people going the other way.
The policy adds that those who withdraw early will be marked as DNF, or did not finish. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And it is sunny here in Juneau today, so get out and enjoy that weather. It is the summer solstice. I'm KTOO's Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for joining.